Chapter 21. A Very Suitable Candidate. In his cage, on his knees, his head tipped back, Magos Sark crooned unwards into the gulfs of the Empyrean, and the words echoed back like the cheering of a trillion insects. The light flooding the tower was coming from inside him, so bright his skin was translucent, and Goblika was sure he could see the shadow of the Magos' skeleton. Goblika stood at the edge of the platform for a while, watching. The unword stirred something primordial in him, as if some deep and vestigial part of his lizard brain was responding. It was the language of infinity, the pre-human, inhuman instructions for creation and negation. He tried to mouth the unwords he heard, to copy and repeat them, to learn them, but they were coming too fast. They always did. He had tried before, almost every time Sark had started the loom and begun to weave. Goblika had never managed to learn any unwords that way. He'd always ended up with a nosebleed or a savage tension headache. The futile effort to learn had, over time, only done one thing. It had changed the colour of his eyes. The few words Goran Goblika did know, the few commands of power, had been taught to him by Lillian Chase, and each syllable had taken many painful weeks to master. Goblika realized he had been standing on the gantry for too long. The skin of his cheeks and brow was tingling and sore, as though he had been out in a strong sun. He'd been looking at the light for longer than he should have. He knew from experience that word burn could be more painful than sunburn. He picked up his auto-rifle and went down a small curved staircase to the monitor station, set up on a platform below and to the side of the main gantry. He checked the displays of the cogitators. Sark's psychometrics and vitals were off the chart, the former too high and the latter too low, but that was fairly standard when an act of weaving was in progress. Other cogitators were trying to map and decipher the sounds coming from the Magos, but their readings were void. Again, that was normal. The Cognitae had procured the most powerful cogitators possible, some taken by force from a Mechanicus facility in the Thracian system, but even these could not cope with the energy and raw data they had been set up to process. Goblika wondered how long Sark would last. No human body should have survived the extremes he had endured over the years. Indeed, none had, prior to Sark. As a junior adept at Kestra in the early days, Goblika had often been tasked with hosing out the cage after a failed trial. Sark should have died the first time he tried to harness the loom. He certainly shouldn't have been able to survive the many weavings he had conducted. But then, Goblika was certain that the process had altered Sark in fundamental ways. Sark had ceased to be remotely human a long time ago. What did that make him? A god? A demon? A eudaimonic spirit? Goblika was sometimes convinced that Sark's soul had burned out years before, and something else, some etheric sentience, had taken up residence inside him, wearing Sark's flesh like a borrowed coat. During the brief moments he became lucid, Sark always begged to be let out of the cage. Goblika wasn't sure it was Sark talking. It wasn't the Magos pleading to be let out of the metal cage. It was the thing inside him whining to be let out of the coat of flesh it was clothed in. Now, even the coat was wearing out. They needed a viable replacement, especially if they were going to honour the king's request to increase productivity. Goblika heard footsteps on the metal stairs behind him, despite the roar of the loom. Da Vinci was ascending to the control platform, half-dragging a heavyset man in a black coat. The man's hands were cuffed in front of him, and he was hunched over in pain. Da Vinci was all but having to force him to walk. But Da Vinci had a supremely satisfied look on his scrawny, tattooed face. "I got him," he said. Goblika walked over. The man in the black coat was standing with his shoulders down and his head bent forwards. He was breathing hard as if he had just run a marathon. Goblika saw blood dripping from his hands and from the chain of his cuffs. Goblika reached out, grabbed the man by the jaw, and forced his head up so he could look him in the eyes. Eisenhorn. The great and mighty Gregor Eisenhorn. His eyes were dead and lifeless. His skin was pale and blotchy, and blood ran from his nose. He was having trouble breathing. Goblika looked him up and down and saw the years of scar tissue, the old augmetics under the coat, the leg braces and strapped servo reinforcement. The man was withered and broken, and had been long before Da Vinci had got his murderous hands on him.
I've looked forward to this moment, said Gobleka. Imagined it, you know. What I'd say. What you'd say. All that. But you're a lot less than I expected. Damaged and weak. And old. Bit of a disappointment, really.
Imagine, replied Eisenhorn, grunting the words out between rasping breaths.
Imagine how little I care.
Oh,
grinned Gobleka, play-acting scared.
Still got it, haven't you? Still got the old edge, eh? Or that's what you'd like to think. Give me some more, so I can tell people afterwards that breaking you was noble labor, not a piece of piss.
Eisenhorn didn't reply.
Where's the blood coming from?
Gobleka asked Da Vinci. Blake plugged him, Da Vinci replied. Body shot.
Did you patch it?
I didn't have a med pack with me, said Da Vinci.
Well, get one. Now,
said Gobleka.
And get the kit, too.
Da Vinci nodded and moved to the lockers at the end of the bank of cogitators.
Where is Blake?
Gobleka called out as he stood studying Eisenhorn. Headshot, replied Da Vinci, sorting through supplies.
Have you seen Strykal?
Not a sign, Da Vinci replied. He came back with a trauma pack. Gobleka opened it, took out a tube of wound sealant, and rammed the applicator nozzle into the glistening hole in Eisenhorn's abdomen. Eisenhorn winced, but remained on his feet. Gobleka pressed the activator and pumped sealant into the wound. Then he walked around Eisenhorn, yanked up his old black coat, and did the same to the exit wound. He tossed the tube back to Da Vinci.
I said get the kit, Da Vinci, he snapped. So, get the kit.
Da Vinci hurried back to the lockers. Gobleka peered into Eisenhorn's eyes. Eisenhorn just glared into the distance and ignored the eerie, violet eyes fixing him.
Did you search him? Gobleka asked.
Of course, Da Vinci called back. A few bits and pieces. A backup gun in his chest rig. I took that.
Now, what's going to happen?
Gobleka said to Eisenhorn, standing so close they were nose to nose.
Is that I'm going to help you. That's a surprise, isn't it? I'm going to keep you alive. I'm going to take the pain away. All the pain. Physical and mental. That frigged up psycho mind of yours must be ready to burst by now. Right?
Eisenhorn said nothing.
This is a big day for you, you know, said Gobleka. Think of it like this is what your entire life has been about. Everything you are, everything you've ever done, leading up to this moment. Right here.
I think he was trying to trick us, said Da Vinci, returning with the kit. You know, like, get caught. He knew he couldn't get past us, so I think he figured he'd let us take him so he could pull some stunt once he was here.
Is that it?
Gobleka asked Eisenhorn, sidelong, as he prepped an injector.
That didn't work out so well, did it? If that was your plan, it turned into all kinds of shit, didn't it? And there's no one to bail you out, either. They're all dead. You understand that, don't you? They're all dead. All your followers and associates. And if they're not, they will be soon. The Magos is hunting them down, any that are left. His instruments are loose in the tower. Your friends, Gregor Eisenhorn, you've brought them to a very, very bad end. You know that? If there are any left alive, which I very much frigging doubt, their deaths will be the most awful thing you can imagine. I bet they wish they'd never signed on. I bet they wish they'd never followed you, and never trusted that you knew what you were doing. You know, I bet their last living thought is hate. Hate for you. Hate for getting them into this mess. Your friends will die hating you for...
They're not my friends,
said Eisenhorn. Gobleka grinned and checked the dose load of the injector.
Oh, I don't think that's true. You've got to be a man's friend to follow him into hell.
Eisenhorn turned his head slowly and looked at Da Vinci.
He follows you, he said.
Da Vinci?
Gobleka laughed.
He's paid to. Paid very well. Besides, he sees the bigger picture. The great reward awaiting all those who participate.
So do the people who follow me, said Eisenhorn.
Do they?
Asked Gablika.
Do they really? Do you ever tell them, your friends, that you lied to them? That you are mad and outlawed and obsessed? That the path you walk is one of pain, and it's untrue? That your cause is doomed, and everyone knows it, even the Rot God King? Your side is the losing side. You follow the false emperor, Eisenhorn. You pledged your life to him. You backed the wrong side in this struggle. And that's just a fact.
We'll agree to disagree,
growled Eisenhorn.
No, said Gablika. From day one, since before the emperor was the emperor, it was always going to go this way. Ordained, predicted, projected, prophesied. Chaos will always prevail. It's a universal law. Order does not endure. Chaos overwhelms. Entropy, Eisenhorn. All systems break down eventually. Everything wears out. Everything falls apart. The universe returns to its preordained natural state. And that's chaos. Forever and always.
Eisenhorn remained silent.
You don't have to take my word for it, said Gablika. I'm going to show you. That's part of my gift to you today. I'm going to share the truth with you, the truth that's always been, so you can see it and know it for yourself. The scales will fall from your eyes, man, and you will think yourself such a fool to have believed otherwise.
You don't know me very well, do you?
Asked Eisenhorn.
See this?
Asked Gablika, raising the injector.
Sark's masterpiece. An engineered viral inoculant. A miraculous thing. He isolated it from samples collected by his grandfather.
The torment, said Eisenhorn.
Gablika grinned.
A man of learning. Yes, the torment. Ulrin's pox. It had so many wonderful names. A gift of the warp. A pestilence like no other. This is inert, of course. An antigenic sac engineered from the original pathogen. It won't kill you. Well, it probably won't. It will transform you. What you are. How you think. It will remake you in wonderful ways. The way Sark remade himself, so he could operate the loom.
Why?
Asked Eisenhorn.
Why what?
Why are you giving it to me?
Well, said Gablika, for one, it will transfigure you and allow you to see the truth. And?
Make me, what, join you?
Asked Eisenhorn.
Pretty much,
laughed Da Vinci.
That won't work, said Eisenhorn.
Ah, said Gablika. Of course, because of your infamous willpower. Your will, so firm and unshakable that no temptation or malice can topple it. Eisenhorn, listen. I may have mocked you, but I'm not an idiot. I know you're a man of considerable talents and abilities. Your career shows that. You have particular strengths and skills that could make you very useful to us, to Lillian. Not in your present state, of course. I know you'd never join us. I respect that even. But this isn't a choice you're going to make.
Eisenhorn glared at him.
Seriously, said Gablika, the torment antigenic is horrible. This will hurt. Most subjects do not survive. Only Magos Sark has ever lived through more than one shot of it. But I think you will, simply because you're so strong. And the inoculant, once it's scorching through your system, will have plenty to work with. That psyche mind of yours, for example. You have walked in the dark for too many years, exposed your psi-active mind to the warp. It's left its imprint on you. You are an etheric sensitive, far closer in nature to the creatures you hunt than you'd ever care to admit. You are ripe and ready. A very suitable candidate.
Where do you want it? Da Vinci asked.
Thrut, replied Koblika.
He looked back at Eisenhorn.
Forget your will, he said. Forget resisting. It's not a matter of that. The torment antigenic will modify you, alter your entire state of being. You will see the warp and be the warp, and that will be all. It won't be a matter of accepting it. It will simply be true.
You're very certain of these things you keep describing as facts, said Eisenhorn.
It's my job, said Koblika. My service to Orpheus, the king in yellow. He trusts me to get it right.
He glanced at Da Vinci.
Hold him steady, he ordered.
Da Vinci closed in, reaching up to drag Eisenhorn's collar down and expose his throat. Koblika stepped forwards with the injector. Eisenhorn's hands were cuffed with military-issue binders. He couldn't pull them apart, so he clenched them together instead, fingers intertwined. As Da Vinci closed in to seize him, he swung his fists like a club into the tattooed man's gut. He was not as tired and weak as they had presumed. Da Vinci barked out air and doubled up. Eisenhorn brought his hands down, now separated, so that the cuff chain hooked around the back of Da Vinci's neck. He slammed down, driving Da Vinci's face into the metal bracing of his rising kneecap. Bone cracked. Da Vinci fell away, moaning and choking. Koblika was lunging in with the injector. Every movement hurt. Eisenhorn's gut wound was severe, and just moving abruptly, raising his knee to take down Da Vinci, had torn the traumatized wound and broken the sealant packing. He felt blood suddenly spill down his back. He raised both arms and blocked Koblika. Koblika was bigger than him and much stronger. He elbowed Eisenhorn's block aside and punched him in the jaw. Eisenhorn staggered a few steps, inadvertently stepping on Da Vinci's splayed fingers. Da Vinci was down on his hands and knees, trying to recover. He yelled in pain as Eisenhorn's iron-shod boot crunched across his hand. Eisenhorn turned and kicked Da Vinci in the rump, throwing him flat on the deck in Goblika's path. Goblika vaulted the fallen man deftly and came at Eisenhorn again. With his hands cuffed, Eisenhorn could only upper block to one side or the other. Koblika feinted a punch from the left, then kicked hard with his right foot. The kick hit Eisenhorn in the hip, but his bracing armature took more of the force. Eisenhorn swung his fists at Koblika, but the man leaned out of the swing, then lunged in and caught the chain of Eisenhorn's cuffs with his left hand. He wrenched Eisenhorn's hands and arms down and to the side. Eisenhorn had no choice but to twist away, exposing his neck to the injector Koblika was stabbing in with his other hand. There was no point fighting Goblika's haul on the cuff chain. Eisenhorn went with it instead, allowing himself to be dragged down. He ducked into the stabbing motion and rammed his shoulder into Goblika's chest. Goblika stumbled backwards, cursing. He had dropped the injector. He reached for it. Eisenhorn kicked it further along the deck.
"Is this it?" Goblika taunted him angrily. "Is this the trick you are going to pull? The stunt you are waiting to play?" "Seems to be working," growled Eisenhorn.
Goblika sprang at him. Eisenhorn blocked again with both forearms, then swung his fists together hard. He caught Goblika's bearded jaw and knocked him sideways across the platform. Goblika crashed into the bank of cogitators. A screen smashed. Data slates tumbled to the deck.
"Freaking help me, you idiot!"
Goblika yelled at Da Vinci. Da Vinci was getting up. His nose and lips were a mangled mask of blood. He spat, drawing one of his las pistols.
"Don't kill him!" Goblika ordered.
The tattooed man cursed aloud and went for Eisenhorn. He twisted the las pistol in his grip and began to beat at Eisenhorn with the weapon's butt. Eisenhorn tried to evade. He raised his chained fist to deflect the blows. Da Vinci kept hitting. Eisenhorn ducked low and hooked the cuff chain around Da Vinci's elbow. Eisenhorn locked his fingers and swung, throwing Da Vinci off his feet. He landed hard. Eisenhorn kicked him to keep him down and unlaced his fingers, freeing his cuffed hands from the man's arm. But Goblika had grabbed him from behind. He had the injector again. Eisenhorn tried to tear himself away. Goblika stabbed in with the needle. Eisenhorn got his hands up, trying to block.
the injector's needle wedged in the taut loops of the cuff chain, centimetres from Eisenhorn's throat. Eisenhorn twisted his wrists, and the cuffs plucked the injector out of Goblika's hands. It went flying down the platform. Goblika broke off and turned to run for it. Eisenhorn moved after him, but was tackled from the side by Da Vinci. Together, they slammed into the cogitator bank. They grappled. Teeth gritted, hissing blood, Da Vinci clamped his hand around the back of Eisenhorn's head and rammed his face into the edge of a cogitator's casing. Eisenhorn stamped back into Da Vinci's shin. As the man screamed in pain, Eisenhorn rotated, grabbed him by the front of his jacket, and heaved him into the bank of screens. Another shattered, billowing sparks. Eisenhorn had his weight on him. Da Vinci couldn't pivot. He reached up and clawed at Eisenhorn's throat. He got a grip and began to throttle, his fingers biting into Eisenhorn's neck. Eisenhorn let himself be pulled down. He let go of the tattooed man's jacket and allowed his hands to slide up the man's chest until he had a hand on either side of the man's neck. The cuff chain bit down into Da Vinci's throat. Da Vinci started to splutter and choke, spitting gobs of blood. His legs milled wildly. He let go of Eisenhorn's neck and began to pummel frantically. Eisenhorn knew he didn't have time to finish the kill. Goblika was coming in again from behind. He grabbed Da Vinci by the shoulders, pulled the thrashing man around, and smashed his head backwards through a cogitator screen. Da Vinci slithered out of the unit in a shower of broken glass and tubing valves and fell sideways onto the deck. Eisenhorn turned to meet Goblika. Goblika circled, head low, tossing the injector from hand to hand like a knife, daring Eisenhorn with each hand. He dummied, then lunged, the injector in his right hand. Eisenhorn sidestepped and tried to sweep Goblika into an overextension with his cuffed hands. But Goblika was sure-footed, and he shoulder-barged Eisenhorn in the belly. He carried him backwards and drove his spine into the platform's handrail. Searing pain flared from the exit wound as it hit the rail. Eisenhorn gasped. Goblika drove him again, then threw a low punch into his gut to agonize the entry wound as well. Eisenhorn stumbled sideways, flailing with his cuffed hands, trying to keep Goblika at bay.
"We're done, you old bastard,"
said Goblika, panting and wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. He hawked and spat on the deck.
"All done now."
Eisenhorn swayed, leaning on the handrail to stay upright. He clawed with his cuffed hands and found the injector sticking out of his neck. He tried to pull it out. His fingers were numb and wouldn't work properly. He fell to one knee, gasping. He finally managed to yank the injector out, but he could see it was empty. He looked up at Goblika. Da Vinci hobbled into view, dripping blood. He clutched Goblika's shoulder for support.
"You get him?"
he asked through swollen lips.
"I got him," said Goblika.